Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
I want something unprofessional.
Oh, so that's why I'm here. To be incompetent for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 14, The Accidental Doctor. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, Doctor.
Oh, God.
Man. The things on that soundboard, really, always a surprise. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you what's coming up on our Patreon, Again With This, episode 99. My God. Dropping June 10th, let's watch Shannon Doherty in North Shore. This was a very short-lived soap opera that she was brought in midway through to try to goose it. Did not work, but let's watch it anyway. It's on YouTube. Season 1, Episode 11, called Alexandra, and we will link that in the show notes. You can hear that and so many more, including our upcoming 100th episode, patreon.com/againwiththis. We'd love to see you there. And now, our C-plot. Matt, Michael, and Mr. and Mrs. Jake Hansen, in air quotes, face relationship decisions. Michael gets to his office to find Kimberly with their final divorce papers. She urges him to look them over and make sure everything is as he expected, but based on the envelope, he somehow knows it's all pretty standard, adding that half of nothing is nothing and she could have just sent them by messenger. And I guess, you know, at this point, he's been divorced enough, like, he probably doesn't have to worry too much about whatever he's signing. It's just like, add it to the pile. Kimberly, meanwhile, gazes sadly through the glass wall into the reception area. Like, I know what they're trying to do, but it's weird.
At least get an exterior-facing window.
Yeah.
She's earned it.
Well, you would think. So when she doesn't respond to him right away, Michael thinks she's pouting because he wants his lawyer to look over the papers before he signs them, and then snaps that he can mail them, whereupon he notices that she's crying and she hurries out before he can make her talk about it. Over at Shooters, Matt is helping open mail at the bar and shows that a liquor wholesaler addressed an invoice to Mr. and Mrs. Jake Hansen. Allison is amused, but when Matt says he thinks it won't be long before that title sticks, both of the Hansons disagree, Jake more glarily than Allison, and Matt takes off in the chill, final paycheck in hand. And a dull discussion ensues to establish that, yes, they are both thinking about the future, but no, neither of them thinks they'll be married anytime soon. I guess watch this space? I don't know. Exactly. Back to Kimberly. She's on the beach house deck drinking margaritas alone when Megan shows up, judgily asking if Kimberly should really be doing that. Kimberly, quite tipsy, says the great thing about being nearly dead is nothing can hurt you anymore. Megan is there to say Michael's fucked up about the divorce papers and may not sign them. So Kimberly hands Megan some cash and tells her to take Michael to Vegas. She can consider it a wedding present. Megan scoffs that Michael is still married to Kimberly, but Kimberly is sure a great getaway with Megan will convince him to finalize the divorce. Just like, I don't know if any getaway with this bonehead is going to be great, but you can try.
Agree.
I mean, speaking of snore, her.
Yeah. And we will be, sadly, at length.
Meh. Content warning for this scene. It is about domestic violence. Spoiler. Some number of days later, Matt is drinking wine and shooting a plastic dart gun in Dan's kitchen when a very pissy Dan returns home, irritably asking what Matt is doing. Matt comments on Dan's mood, and Dan says he had a bad day and hates guns, even toy ones. Matt says it's a gag gift for a party they're going to the next night, which we will get to, but Dan is not in a party mood tomorrow, clip two.
You ever mentioned the party?
Well, it just came up.
Yeah, well, you can just bury it again because we're not going.
Yes, we are, Dan. These are my friends.
Is this wine you're drinking?
Yeah, what if it is?
I told you I don't allow alcohol in my home.
You're doing it again, Dan. This is the whole control freak.
Somebody's got to put the brakes on around
here.
Well,
you know what? I am just fine. And if you're having a impulse control issue, maybe you just ought to relax.
Don't patronize me.
Ooh, what am I, touching a nerve? Huh? You afraid of letting go?
Shut up, Matt.
Ooh, I am so scared.
No, you're drunk. That's what you are.
No, you see, I'm the one who has a problem with pills. You are the one who has a problem with booze.
Girls, why do you think that's funny? Get out! Oh, jeez. I'm really sorry, Matt. Are you okay?
Stay the hell away from me.
Ooh, yikes.
I mean, we all knew this was coming, but...
Of course. Ugh. It's still rough.
Yeah. And, I mean, why? Why does Matt always have to have this? It just sucks.
It does. Matt keeps his dukes up as Dan shambles out. Hey. Later, Michael and Megan are back in bed at Matt's place when she suggests celebrating his divorce with a trip, but he actually hasn't signed the papers yet, nor will he confirm Megan's whiny suspicion that he's never going to. So to get out of this awkward conversation, Michael quickly agrees to take whatever trip she wants to plan. And she immediately says Vegas, her treat. He agrees. And sometime later, Megan stops by the beach house to tell Kimberly the Vegas trip is on. Good timing, since Kimberly wanted to show Megan the multiple accidental death and dismemberment life insurance policies she has purchased. Megan knows this is all for Michael's benefit, but Kimberly has changed Megan's life too, and she's really going to miss Kimberly. These two almost have chemistry, I have to say. It seems like this is heading in that direction. I know it's not because it's the 90s, but it could.
And yeah, this is like the only time that Kelly Rutherford is even sort of interesting is when she's playing off of Marcia Cross, who is able to do that with scene partners who sometimes are not that great on their own.
True.
It's a shame and sort of a waste that they don't go to Vegas and make honest women out of each other, but oh well.
Yeah. So as Kimberly's telling Megan how happy she is to know Megan's going to marry Michael and make him happy after Kimberly's death, Michael appears on the deck and watches them warmly chatting. And he gets some ideas, I guess. And we don't know what he thinks is happening because that's where we leave them.
Yeah, you can hear all the blood rushing somewhere. Is it to which head? To which head? Who knows?
Indeed. On to the B plot. Peter rides an emotional roller coaster. Taylor is getting the paper in time to watch as Amanda hands off a cardboard box to Michael. It's for Peter, since she assumes Michael knows where he's staying. And Michael tries to tell Amanda he doesn't think that she and Peter should break up, as though he and his imminent third divorce have any standing. But this is also the first Taylor upstairs is hearing about the split, and or so she behaves. I guess she heard about it at the end of the last episode and forgot. Michael goes on to blame Peter's inability to perform surgeries on his emotional distress over the breakup, so she's messing with Michael's money now. But Amanda says talking has not helped them. Clip three.
All right, I'll keep my nose out of it. You know, but when he gets this box, he's going to have an army of questions. What do I tell him?
Tell him to go to hell. Did you get all that, Taylor?
Queen.
She sure did get all that. At the office later, Michael presents the box to Peter along with Amanda's message. Michael optimistically notes that it's just some of Peter's stuff, so Amanda might be open to reconciliation, and Peter should cling to that while getting back to work. And Peter crabs at him to back off, but Michael crabs back that their equipment has all been repossessed and they're going to get the lights shut off next. So I'm not sure what he thinks Peter is supposed to be doing. They, like, can't even look at x-rays in the office anymore. Over to Kyle's, where Taylor is calling to invite guests to Kyle's upcoming birthday party. Gag gifts only, as we heard earlier. Kyle himself comes out as she hangs up, noting that Peter and Amanda are not on the guest list. We have had zero indication in weeks that Kyle likes either Peter or Amanda, so of course they aren't, but Kyle thinks they should be at his party, apparently. Clip 4.
Oh, now you want to play matchmaker.
Yeah. We've never discussed this, but we both know that we are responsible for half their problems. For some reason, ever since we came to town, their relationship has gone to hell.
A coincidence. Yet you somehow feel responsible? I don't get that.
I don't think your flirting with Peter Burns was a coincidence. But since it's such a big issue for you, I'll call him and invite him myself.
Well, they won't come.
Oh, yes, they will.
What?
Yeah, what?
I mean, who cares? And get on with it. But also, what? Exactly,
yeah, what are we supposed to think Kyle thinks or knows?
Yeah, and which Kyle is this also?
Right.
I will tell you that this is the Kyle that holds his coffee cup incorrectly, Brandon Walsh style. Like, hey, Starburst Prop Masters, let's all go back in time and get big enough mugs so that they don't have to fucking do that, because it's annoying.
Mm-hmm. At D&D, Amanda's just hanging up with Kyle when Craig comes in and offers to take her to dinner the next night. She declines, having just accepted Kyle's invitation for no reason that makes any sense. She doesn't even want to go there to eat for free. She hates Kyle. Like, why would she go? Whatever.
Seriously, go I know to Shooters. Yes. Get a burger.
Exactly. Anyway, Craig thought he and Amanda could talk about what happened in Santa Barbara, and Amanda shuts down discussion of her personal life in a work environment. Craig decides to push his luck. Clip 5.
Now I know that under that iron facade, you're hurting like a little girl.
You don't know what I feel about anything.
Oh, I guess you're still upset.
Your mind is up.
Like a little girl. Gross. Also, you are her junior by a decade? Like, shut up.
Yeah. Also, iron facade. Hey, Lloyd, mellow off. Who writes for Craig?
At the party the next night, Allison notices Amanda having a bad time. Amanda doesn't want to talk about it, nor does she know where Peter is. But then Jake and Allison see Peter walk in and take off to give them privacy. But before Peter can spot Amanda, Taylor runs over to warn him that she's there at Kyle's invitation. And Peter obviously heads straight for Amanda, ignoring Taylor. Clip 6.
It's good to see you, Amanda.
Kyle promised me you wouldn't be here, but I suppose that was all part of some master plan.
Oh, come on. I had no idea you'd be here either.
Pardon me for not believing a word you say.
And now, wait a minute. We haven't seen each other in days, and we haven't talked. You're my wife, and I miss you, and I love you.
Well, you have an incredibly stupid way of showing it.
I know. The whole scene in Santa Barbara was a mistake, and I'm sorry. But is that really enough to end things?
I don't know. Maybe it is. But right now, I don't even want to think about it. Or you.
Okay, then I'll wait. Forever, if I have to.
I mean, he'll wait like 10 years. We know that.
I mean, I just, the rest of the show is so goddamn boring right now. Like, that they are apart is like actually painful for me. I don't like it. Get them back together.
I know. I agree. Taylor, however, does not agree with us. She looks mad that they're even talking. And the next morning, as Kyle waits for Taylor poolside, Taylor calls Peter's office and leaves a message to make sure he's okay and that he knows that she's thinking of him. Yeah, he knows you're always thinking of him. That's all anyone knows about you. Peter himself is in a cafe alone doing work and resenting happy couples, rudely telling a guy with his girlfriend that it doesn't last, you know, which is kind of funny.
Oh, okay. And yeah.
Then he goes out to the sidewalk just in time to see a large sedan plow into a parked car. And the driver is an old lady passed out on the steering wheel. And her husband yells for someone to call 911. After a long moment, Peter runs over to help. Long story short, Peter determines she has a crushed windpipe and saves her life with an alfresco tracheotomy. And Peter's back, baby! Over to Mrs. Peter. Clip 7.
Sack him! Sack him! Yes! Oh!
Watching the NFL on Fox.
And wow. Here's the other thing. You're actually not, because it's Saturday.
Oh, right.
That's on Sunday. Mm. She's watching college football, maybe, which actually does seem like a thing she would be into.
Perhaps.
Like bone crushing or like rugby. Mm. I don't know.
Well. Her enjoyment of the NFL on Fox, or is it, is interrupted by Craig popping by. He wanted her input on a couple of things. She doesn't intend to work on a Saturday, as Sarah noted, and tries to slam the door in Craig's face, but he shoves in and comments on her football fandom. She says she enjoys seeing grown men kick each other into the ground, and he claims to have $100 riding on the game and parks it on the couch next to her. She has $200, so if he's staying, he can't talk or eat her chips, and that's where we leave the two of them. Fair enough, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, if he's not going to be talking or eating chips, then he's not really a problem.
It's true.
Neutralized.
On to our A plot. Big gifts and big disclosures for Jane and Sydney. Maybe a trip to friggin' Maryland for Sam. Maryland has never gotten as much attention as it has in the season of Melrose Place, by the way.
No. Even Maryland is like, it's like writing letters pretending to be Pennsylvania and being like, could you stop with the Maryland?
It's true.
Signed the Utz Corporation.
Sam pounds on Sydney's door, demanding to know where the Maryland painting is and ranting on about losing control of her sales when Carter calls Sydney from his limo. He has a pencil behind his ear, so we know he is in the middle of businessing quirkily. Sydney, for some reason, asks how her painting is doing, thus tipping off Sam about whom she's talking to. So Sam gets into Sydney's space bubble as Carter asks Sydney to an event at his place later that week. She'll be there. Billy's leaving for work when he sees a frustrated Sam sitting despondently at the foot of the stairs. She explains there's a family reunion in Maryland coming up, but she can't afford to go. And he starts to offer to help, but Offerlook realizes that's Craig's shit and stops himself. Growth, I guess, of a sort. I'll give him credit for that.
Sure.
At the store, Sherry's hanging around as Sydney quietly wraps up a phone call to her mom and goes to get Jane to say hello. But Jane's with a customer and claims she'll call Mrs. Andrews back. And after Sydney has sadly hung up, Sherry tries to intervene. Clip 8.
You know, Sid, if it would help, I'll talk to Jane and be sure she calls her mother.
You're meddling.
Well, you don't think I see what's going on here? First you're staying for the holidays. Then you're staying for the January sale. How long before it's Memorial Day, Labor Day? You know, I actually think you're enjoying the fact that you're destroying my family.
What are you talking about?
My mother was crying on that phone. Crying. And you don't care, do you? You're too busy reaping the rewards of long-lost momdom with your lunatic offspring.
I have been trying to help.
Oh, help yourself to a partnership in the store.
Sydney, that's enough. I want you out of here now.
Oh, fine.
Protect her and forget all about Mom and me. Damn it, Jane. I have picked your sorry butt off the pavement how many times now after you were raped, after that whole mess with Richard, after everything I have done for you. You choose this over me.
Laura Layton, I mean, bringing more to the scene than it deserves.
Yeah. Also, Sherry, just go with Sid.
Yeah, truly.
Although that line about that she's like, and then you're staying for the January sale. Like, well, I'm going to stop you there because, come on.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think Sherry was being nice and that the issue is, as ever, Jane turning Sherry into the center of her world in a creepy way. But, you know, I don't blame Sydney for feeling rejected and just taking it out on the nearest target.
Well, and also that Sydney is now the one stuck listening to their mom.
Yeah.
Sob on the phone.
Yeah.
because Jane is being a damp weirdo, because mm-hmm. that's what Jane is.
Yeah. After Sydney is stomped out, Sherry feels bad, and Jane hugs her and says it's not her fault, and outside, Sydney watches them before sadly walking off. And the next day, Billy sees Sam coming out of Jane's place. A gallery is taking some of her old paintings on consignment, so if they sell fast, she could make it home for this reunion. And as we learned in the last episode, all of Sam's paintings are supposed to be of famous death locations. I'm not sure which of these Sam's childhood home is supposed to be. Maybe the Sharon Tate house? It seems like there are contraceptive diaphragms or condoms. Hard to tell without scale all over the lawn. Please go to the visual aids and look at this real weird painting and just tell us what you think is happening in it.
Mm.
To her credit, Sam admits she's not that confident about the piece's sales prospects, given that she is kind of a nobody. Like, okay, at least she knows. Again, growth. Yeah. Later, Jane's making tea when Sherry crosses through with her suitcase. She is finally leaving, but it's not because of Sydney. She says, clip 9.
Look, when you were born, I expected so much support from my sister. And all she did was blame me, so I blamed her right back. And now we have all this guilt and anger.
So what are you saying? That it's my fault that you don't talk to your sister? My fault for being born?
Of course not. I just needed her approval so much, the way Sydney needs your approval.
Oh, so now you're blaming me for hurting Sydney?
I'm not blaming you for anything.
No, you're just looking for excuses to leave me. After everything I've offered you, I open my house, my shop, my heart, for God's sake.
Jane, please.
What do you have to go back to that's so great? Huh? That crummy little apartment? That nothing life? That's what you're leaving me for? I'm sorry. Mom, wait!
Okay. Here's what's not happening in Sherry's crappy little apartment, sleeping on the couch with a stranger, which I assume is what's happening because we still haven't established who is sleeping where in this arrangement.
Yeah. Who smells like oil paint and Billy juice? That's for starters. Second of all, she's leaving because you're a petty, clingy asshole.
Yes.
I suspect. Mm-hmm. And hey, writers, turning Jane into a like defensive dick doesn't actually make her more interesting. It just means she's a defensive dick.
Yeah.
And boring.
Yes.
Get rid.
Yeah. All Sherry would have to say is, well, I saw how you're treating your other mom and you seem like an asshole, so bye-bye. Like,
yeah.
That nothing life? Jesus Christ, Jane. Anyway.
I mean, she's got Ed.
Yeah. Ed seems great.
Yeah.
Anyway, having a much better night, Sydney pulling up to Carter's house for the big benefit and unapologetically handing off the keys to her little brown hatchback to the valet, even though everyone else's car is fancier. In the middle of his party full of swells, Carter is laser focused on Sydney as soon as she finds him. He suggests food, but pulls her away from the buffet table and into the giant chef's kitchen for a grilled cheese. I don't care if this is a corny rich guy affectation. I love it. Have a grilled cheese any time of the day or night, in my opinion.
Mm, agree. Breakfast of champions. Mm-hmm. And also, they are cute together. And
they are.
I mean, I'm sure the show will find some way to kick Sydney in the tits, because it always does. But yep. It is nice to see her winning.
It is.
Sometimes.
But then he has to admit he doesn't know how to make a grilled cheese because everything in his life is done by professionals. He wants to experience something unprofessional by her. But just then, Walter comes in to call Carter away for some presentation or other. And when Carter pouts, Sydney volunteers to make the sandwiches while he's gone. But he tells her to come watch him receive the award of a convertible for being the most software developer of the year or something. Doesn't matter. Sydney marvels that they're just giving him a car, and he replies that it's too bad he doesn't drive. And after he has graciously accepted it and the crowd is breaking up, Sydney compliments the car and he immediately tells her to take it, giving her the keys. And the next day, Jane is pounding on the door of Sherry's crappy apartment when Ed comes out of his neighboring apartment to say Sherry isn't there. He was hoping she was with Jane because Sherry's boss called Ed looking for her. He disagrees with Jane that they should call the cops, but adds there are some things Jane should know about her mother. And Jane figures Sherry told him the truth, but he says she didn't have to. And he also has a pretty good idea where she is. So cut to them strolling on the sidewalk. Ed telling the story of meeting Sherry when she showed up for a job at his temp agency, unable to type, but clearly special. Read, real hot.
Mm-hmm.
They have been dating on and off since then, and it was years before she told Ed about placing a baby for adoption. And having stopped in front of a bar, Ed says Sherry never got over it. She just got better coping. But Jane's return threw the door wide open, and sometimes Sherry tries to dull the pain. And again, Jane has not been helping. She's made this as painful as possible. She's clearly been putting Jerry through the ringer and ignoring all of the signs that Sherry is uncomfortable with this.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, Sherry is sitting at the bar looking roof. Ed, who has known Sherry intimately for many years, thinks he should speak to Sherry first, but Jane insists that she do it because she has to be an asshole at every stage of this process, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry does not seem happy to see Jane, nor surprised that Ed brought Jane there, but she goes on. Clip 10.
I was doing so good. Secretary job, somebody to sleep with on Saturday night. Now I can't even go out and have a drink without Mom. Go home, go home, Mom.
Oh, Mom, stop it.
Stop calling me that.
Listen, you're my mother, whether you like it or not.
I don't like it. I don't like being suffocated.
Drag her, Jade.
You want to be with me every second of the day because you don't have anybody else. You've suffocated them all to death. When was the last time you got lucky?
Sherry, what is wrong with you? Do you want me to hate yourself that much? Are you going to make everybody hate you?
Leave me alone.
I don't hate you, Mom.
Well, you should. Because I'm a loser. I gave away my child. Oh, we're selfish.
No. It was the right thing. It was the only thing you could do. You were just scared. We all are sometimes.
Yeah. But I'm the queen of scared.
Okay. It's a shame it ended there because Donna Mills almost sells this dumb line, but doesn't quite. And she was making great points early in that clip. It's just a mm-hmm. shame that she had to back off them and try and make it like, again, that she's Harry and the Hendersoning Jane to like
yeah,
go back to
like
her life.
She's just lashing out because she's scared and, yeah. you know, the trauma of which, like, you know, in real life. Yes,
sure.
That's real.
Yes.
But I was here for ginned up. Sherry,
yeah,
being like, can't you just fuck off?
Yeah,
get away from me, man, mom, bait it, like,
yeah.
And it's like shame on you, and I'm like, no, keep going.
Yes.
She didn't get the hint yet.
Truly, because she's right about everything she said. Like, you're suffocating mm-hmm. me, like you've suffocated everyone else in your life. Like, yeah,
kind of.
Anyway, Ed steps forward to gather Sherry up and bring her home. Elsewhere, Sydney's driving her hot new car up to Carter's front door. There's a weird thing where she, like, backs up and parks again. I'm not sure if, like, they told her to do it and then forgot to cut it. Like, it's weird.
Or she was supposed to be deciding whether she was going to keep it, but that was sort of like, why do we need this part?
Right.
Yeah, it's weird.
I mean, if it was that, I would feel like they would cut to her in the car, like at least making a face or something. But truly,
yeah.
all we see is the car moving.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, after Sydney has climbed out, Carter comes running through the front door, alarmed. She says she's decided she can't accept the car. Things are already so lopsided between them. And Carter very calmly tells her if she likes the car, she should keep it. If she doesn't want it, he's going to donate it to charity, which convinces Sydney to keep it, of course. And she wants to celebrate by taking him out for a drive, but he has meetings all morning and he promises to call her soon, but she does not seem to believe it. And that night, Sam shows up at Billy's place. He expected her to be in fucking Maryland, but she decided not to go because the gallery manager told her all her paintings were purchased by the same buyer. And she's obviously casing the joint to see where Billy may have stashed them. And he fails to prevent her from opening his bedroom closet and finding all of them. She is touched slash horny and sex ensues, we are given to understand. And the next morning, Sam comes out to find Billy putting nails in the walls to hang all her art. I mean, wait for her to wake up before you start pounding nails, you fucking Claude. She was asleep. They are both still very into each other and have no regrets about the night before. Great. That's it for the episode. Like, again, it's so hard to care about these two. They suck.
Yeah, it's true. They do. I still feature his sideburns, though.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. Let us close this out by naming our episode MVP.
Sherry. In vino Sheritas.
Drunk Sherry. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sherry baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't argue with that. It was my favorite part of the whole episode. So yeah, I agree. Least valuable player. Dan, when your partner is putting his dukes up at you, you fucked up.
Yeah, that's not good. And also the writers for continuing to put Matt through shit. Like, just find him a nice man and get him out of here. It's time. Next time on Again With This, Peter tries to win Amanda back, Dan tries to win Matt back, Megan and Michael go to Vegas, Jane goes home, and you'll be going through a week's supply of Pepto-Bismol when you see our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. Those are on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. And we may not have mentioned a party, but there is one, and it's on Twitter at AWT90210, and on our Patreon page, patreon.com/againwiththis. There's a ton of extra 90210 and Melrose content to be had, including our monthly recaps of the 90210MG podcast for our subscribers at the fancy $5 level and above. I'm overused crab signifier Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Queen of Scared, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is gag gift only, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.